Bite into a stacked sandwich made with Hero Bread. And the only thing you'll think is, delicious. You won't think it has up to 19 grams protein, 11 to 32 grams of fiber, or just 0 to 5 grams net carbs. But it does. Hero Bread. No compromises, just loaves, buns, tortillas, bagels, and noodles packed with flavor. Right now, get 10% off at hero.co with code IHEART. That's hero.co, code IHEART. All figures per serving of Hero Bread. See nutrition facts on hero.co.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to F1 Explains. My name is Christian Hugill. This is the official Formula One podcast that lives and breathes to explain this brilliant world of Formula One. F1 Explains at F1.com is our email address. Send us some emails about anything you like, really, within reason on Formula One, and we will find the best people in the paddock to answer them. That is exactly what Stephanie in Texas did. My favourite stop on the Formula One calendar, Austin, Texas. Stephanie said she really wanted us to record an episode all about the Madring. Of course, Formula One's new home of the Spanish Grand Prix, with Madrid making its debut on the calendar this weekend. So Stephanie, you are getting the F1 Explains gold treatment here. We are dedicating an entire episode to your questions. We'll answer those questions about this new track during this show. And who better to answer them than the man who made history by completing the first ever laps of the Madring in the passenger seat next to Carlos Sainz?
I like this corner. Turn one is nice. Eh?
I can feel that you're building a bit more confidence.
Well, now I know the track.
Yeah.
This is going to be super quick. I love this corner.
Whoa.
Look at the grip.
Oh, it just sticks.
It sticks.
Yeah.
Wow.
That was nice.
He is Madrid's favourite child. Of course he is. And favourite child of F1 Explains. F1 correspondent Lawrence Barreto is here. Did you like that? Did you?
That was incredible. Oh, I love that. Sorry, I got too excited by
it. You are F1 Explains' favourite child. Don't tell Alex Jakes, but yeah, you can't have favourite children, but I guess we do all. Laura Winter, how are you, Lawrence Barreto?
I am all the better for chatting to you, Christian, and having intros like that. So thanks very much for having me back.
It's always a joy. And so, working with Mr. Barreto, I knew he was doing this alongside Mr. Sainz. That lap looked absolutely epic. I was so excited when I found out you were doing this. What was it like being driven by Carlos? And of course, what were your first impressions of the circuit?
I mean, as dream days in the office go, that is right up there. And I know I've been lucky to do a lot of cool things. But what was particularly cool for me is I've known Carlos since he entered F1 in 2015. He's never given me a hot lap before. You know, I've forgiven him for that.
Well, I was going to say, that should have happened sooner, shouldn't it?
Exactly, yeah. Carlos, are you listening? But obviously, it was great to have that opportunity because I knew that he would try and scare me as quickly as possible.
Yes.
But the whole lap around that, he did exactly that. But it was a phenomenal experience, Christian, to have an opportunity to see a track that he's been so involved with,
yeah,
in trying to like advise, assist the promoters in kind of getting this event and this track in shape.
Well, I was going to say, you know Carlos, you know, better than most. He's really passionate about this, isn't he?
Absolutely. Like, you called him Madrid's favourite child.
Yes.
Like, he loves the city that he was born in, that he lived in, that he spent so much of his life in. And that just oozes through when, yeah, he talks about the city. So to have the opportunity to spend a lot of time driving around the circuit where it's going to be his first home race in Madrid, so he's done many races in Barcelona, to have that opportunity was super cool. And you could just see in his face, it was like a kid in a candy shop.
Yeah.
Like, he was just very excited to be driving we had a Ford Mustang, which was very cool,
very cool.
To drive around the circuit. And that was the first time, right? He'd heard about it, he'd talked about it, he'd seen it, but that was the first time he took a car out around there. And he would barely wanted to talk to start with because he was so fully focused on wanting to understand what he had to play with.
Well, we just played a clip of it a little earlier. You can still see the video on Formula One's YouTube channel. But what I loved about it was that, like, obviously, of course, now the Grand Prix weekend is here. The circuit is ready. But, like, the circuit still looked like it was being built. It's so rare to see you're doing the map of the circuit, but with it all still coming up around you. What were those first impressions of it?
Well, when we got there, they had just officially finished the lane of the track, and that was essentially it. Obviously there were plenty of work going on in and around it, but it was like you were in the desert.
Yeah.
Because obviously you were surrounded by a lot of unfinished facilities, which was part of the plan. But what was incredible about it was that it was just us out there. Obviously no one was really watching us. We had all of the time in the world. They'd shut the roads. The police had shut the roads, basically, because obviously part of the track is on public roads. So obviously that meant that they had to formally close it for us to do these hot laps, which was very good of them. And to have the chance to see where it's set. So it's sitting at the airport, about 5 minutes drive away. It's about 20 minutes drive outside of downtown Madrid. And it was just a chance to see how it navigates through the various cool little neighborhoods. Real Madrid's training ground is behind one of the fan zones, and Carlos Sainz, obviously a massive Real Madrid fan, so seeing those kind of sights going past and what it meant to kind of pass those kind of historic places was pretty cool. But what was particularly weird about it is you're obviously driving around this track, but there's no grandstands, there's no hospitality, there's just nothing there. You are, it feels like you're in a computer game in many ways, on a simulator, but obviously you're not, you know, in real life. You're driving past a petrol station at one point. There you're going up like a ramp over a roundabout, you're going under a highway. It was just like they'd closed the roads for us. And it was it's potentially the only time I'm ever going to get that kind of feeling if they've shut a city down for Carlos Sainz to drive me around.
Yeah.
And it was awesome. It was great. He had his mouth open for a lot of it. And I don't know if many people have seen memes on social media, but when he's concentrating, he tends to leave his mouth open.
I've spoken to him about these memes.
And
yes.
It's just very funny when you see it in real life and that element of focus.
And obviously he had his concentrated face on, but what did he think of the circuit?
So obviously he'd spent a little bit of time kind of doing fly-throughs in computer-generated things, but he'd never physically driven it. And I think his initial impression was he was far more surprised at how good it was. We were coming up the turn, up towards the turn 7-8 chicane, so it's just up over a ramp. And he was like giggling to himself as we were going up
nice.
There, because he was like, oh my God, this is pretty cool. And then as you get to the kind of, it breaks into the chicane, it's like a whole different world appears. It's like Narnia basically appears, and you dip down into the purpose-built part of the circuit, and it's just like he's doing oohs and ahs, like you're on a roller coaster as we're kind of making our way around. And then he stops biting his tongue when he's like properly trying to focus, and he's got his fingertips on the steering wheel, so he's not even gripping it like presumably you and I would do when we're terrified as we're going around there. He's using his like fingertips to like guide the car around. It was a beautiful thing
to
see.
A light, relaxed grip on a road car, if you like, is optimal for that sort of thing. It really helps. You've described it brilliantly, Lawrence. I enjoyed listening to that, let alone being in the car. The corner that everyone is talking about with this track is, I'm not famed for my ability to say...
give it a go.
Yeah, to say words like this. La Monumental?
La Monumental, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And I've been practicing it because basically Carlos said I was saying it wrong when we were doing it around the laptop.
This is the thing. I don't think either of us are going to say it with Spanish flair. Listen, we've tried our best. Le Monumental. And we've had an email from a listener, Gabriel, on this one. Gabriel says, hi, Christian and the F1 Explains team. I'm Gabriel, and I'm flying in from Beirut for my first ever F1 race at the Madrid Grand Prix. Gabriel, that's amazing. I'll be sitting at Le Monumental for all 3 days. What can I expect?
Well, firstly, what a race as your first Grand Prix to go to. Secondly, what a location for you to be sat at. When we went through Le Monumental, it's a 24% gradient. So it's a very, very steep banked corner, kind of like a hairpin. And there were no grandstands there, so I don't think we got the full feeling of what it's going to be like when the drivers are there. But with the grandstands now up on either side, I think there's hospitality on the inside, grandstands on the outside, it's going to feel like they're in a ball ring. It's going to feel like they're going through like this tunnel of fans. It's going to be a burst of colour, presumably of yellow and red, of the Spanish flags that they've painted on the inside, but also the fans that are going to pack the place out. And it's going to feel like a cacophony of noise, and almost like you're going like Rainbow Road maybe through on Super Mario Kart.
Mario,
it's going to be like, you know,
yeah.
It's going to be an incredible experience then. But I think from a racing perspective, because it's actually quite wide, in theory, we were talking about the fact you could get maybe three cars wide through that corner. I think in reality, it probably will end up being two because the cars are a little bit wider. But the very fact you can take so many different lines through this corner, that you could see cars going side by side potentially through this corner, means that where you're sat is going to be pretty special, particularly as that section then leads on to what Carlos has said is the best overtaking opportunity. So long as you get that section right and you follow the car closely enough, then there's a good overtaking opportunity as you pop out of that.
It's all very exciting. Lawrence, stay there just a moment. We're going to hear more from you later. But now we're going to hear from Carlos Jimenez. He is the Mad Ring's chief operating officer. I spoke to him a little earlier in the week to find out how this track has come to life.
Well, it has been a relatively long journey, but the time has passed very, very fastly. It was 4 years ago in summer 2022 that we heard, at least in the technical department that I manage, the first conversation were taking place to consider the possibility to host a Formula One race in a brand new circuit here in Madrid, because we had Formula One like 40 years ago in a traditional and spectacular circuit, but it's no longer homologated for hosting modern Formula One races. We are a venue center where we host events, but we never dreamed of hosting a Formula One Grand Prix because we didn't have a circuit in that moment. And that's when all started 4 years ago.
And how did you go from an idea, a dream almost 4 years ago, to the reality of us just being hours away now from the first Spanish Grand Prix in Madrid of this modern era?
With a lot of work of many, many people. So there has been almost 5,000 professionals working on this project since the very beginning. You need to design from scratch the circuit. You need to adapt the circuit to the urban circumstances around the circuit, because we have to keep in mind that this is a circuit built inside a city. So it's not easy because you have to consider a lot of regulation, limitations. So that is when you start shaping out how the circuit could be. That work takes longer than the actual construction works. We spent more hours and time preparing the site, getting the permits, designing the track than the actual construction, which has been in record time, less than 1 year.
Yeah, it's all popped up very quickly. And talk to us about the design of the track. What were you trying to achieve with the actual circuit itself?
There is a main challenge, which is a major highway connecting the city center with the airport, which is very, very close to the circuit. And that highway has to be crossed two times by the circuit, because we have two sections basically in the circuit: a more urban city-like street circuit in the south section, in a relatively traditional circuit layout in the north section. So it's a kind of a hybrid circuit with two separate sections, which are divided by a major highway. We have two tunnels crossing the highway, so the circuit goes under the highway on both tunnels. And we had a blank piece of paper in the north section where we could design almost whatever we wanted, because there was a massive plot of land where we could design the circuit, 500,000 square meters, to create very iconic parts like La Monumental, for instance. But in the south section, we have to make the circuit compatible with the existing public roads and also with the existing infrastructure of IFEMA. So in a way, it's similar to other Grand Prix and circuits. Like, for instance, Miami has similarities around a stadium. We are around a Congress Center in the south, but in the north section, it was a blank piece of paper where we could design almost whatever we wanted.
Because you've also got, with Formula One, the paddock, you've got grandstands, you've got room for thousands and thousands of people. Was that a challenge to fit all that in the heart of Madrid, which anyone who's ever been will tell you is a busy city?
Yeah, it has been challenging, but at the end, we took advantage of what we already had in the south, in the exhibition hall. So we have a very singular pit building with two sections divided in two and connected by a existing building, which is very iconic with glass facade, direct views to the track and to the pits. And the adaptation, it has not been so hard in the south. In the north, what we had, as I mentioned before, is a huge plot of land where we put the track, but it's also that we had to design a entertainment offer around the track in that piece of land. So we have created the biggest fan zone in any Grand Prix. It's completely massive.
Well, I'm very excited to see that. And let's talk about the circuit itself. So many tracks on our calendar have their iconic sections, their iconic corners. Of course, we've got the likes of Maggots and Beckett's at Silverstone. What everybody is talking about for this race, and excuse my poor Spanish accent here, Carlos, is La Monumental. Talk to us about that corner, and what's the aim of it to have that sort of talking point corner that so many other tracks on the calendar have?
Well, it's for sure. It's we wanted to create something iconic in the circuit, and it's a landmark probably in the circuit and in the city. We have here in La Monumental a banquet curb, which is going to be the steepest in the calendar from this year on, and the longest banquet curb. And despite the angle, it could be a interesting point in the exit and in the entrance with the new engines. So we might see very interesting strategies of the teams in that particular section, not only La Monumental, but also in the turns right after and right before. It's going to mark probably the different strategies of the teams. That part is interesting, but we also have the stretch between turn 5 and 9 with downhill and uphill sections, which are going to be also interesting in terms of battery strategy.
And of course, we love a bit of strategy. We love a strategic battle, but all Formula One fans want to know around the world, can we see close, exciting on-track racing on this circuit?
Sure. As I mentioned before, it's not a traditional street circuit. It's something completely new that we haven't seen before. It's a mix between both worlds, street circuits, traditional circuits. There is a lot of expectation around the track, not only because it's new, obviously, but because it's very, very singular. So I myself and we behind the project, all the professionals behind the project, have a huge expectation on what is going to happen during the race.
Well, we're very excited, Carlos. And you mentioned what a long journey it's been putting on any major sporting event is, let alone building a Formula One Grand Prix from scratch. What will it mean to you when you're able to see cars on track for the first time?
I think I'm not going to believe it because we spent, myself, obviously, all the teams that I manage have spent, as I mentioned before, almost 4 years or 4 years and a half trying to get this dream done. There was, in the beginning, a lot of difficulties. The journey itself have been challenging, but very, very rewarding from a professional and personal perspective. We are an event company, obviously. We are not a motorsport company, but we had a very interesting background in terms of events organization. And this has been, without any doubt, the most challenging project of many, many professionals in this company, including me, so far. And it's going to be very, very probably emotional when the race ends on Sunday.
And then I know what you all like, you organisers of Grand Prix. The race will end on Sunday. You'll have a brief moment of celebration and then you'll be thinking about next year and it all goes again.
Yes, correct. Well, we need to dismantle part of the circus, especially in this south section where we are right now in these offices, because we need to celebrate more events. But for sure, as with other promoters and other circuits, there will be many lessons learned in this first inaugural edition. And we had to apply them as soon as the next year for getting that done. And we have already understood that in the process that we have followed for the construction to be on time for the second edition with all the improvements. We need to start working as soon as Monday after the race. So there is going to be little time to celebrate and almost no time to waste to be on time again.
Well, give yourself time for at least one glass of champagne, won't you? At least one little celebration.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. Carlos, listen, all the very best with it. We're so excited for the weekend. And thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us on F1 Explained. It's been great to talk to you.
It has been fantastic. Thank you very much for your interest. And we see you in Madrid.
Welcome back to F1 Explains the Mad Ring. Before the break, you heard my chat with Carlos Jimenez, the Chief Operating Officer of the Mad Ring. Really interesting to talk to him. Also earlier in the podcast, we heard the insight and wisdom of F1 correspondent Lawrence Barreto, who did the first ever lap of the Mad Ring, sat alongside Carlos Sainz. Lawrence, we're going to answer some of Stephanie's quickfire questions about the track now. Stephanie's questions are why we're doing this episode of F1 Explains. And by the way, you can email us f1explains@f1.com. And who knows, we might make an episode about your question or answer them in one of our quickfire shows. Stephanie's first question. Lawrence, you ready? We are doing a bit of quickfire here. We've got a few to get through. Where are the most overtakes expected to happen?
So I reckon in the section just after Le Monumental, I think the cars will be able to follow each other pretty quick through there. And then I believe it's a left-hander they'll be able to get into there.
Any guesses on whether the tyre compounds may lead towards the softer or harder tyres in the range?
Well, I'm cheating a little bit here, given Pirelli have already announced what it's going to be.
Any clues? Anything that could give you a possible hint other than Pirelli telling you literally the answer?
Yeah, I know. Thank you, Pirelli.
Well done, Pirelli. And listen, that's what we pay them for. Well done.
It's the medium range of tyres. It'll be the C2, the C3 and the C4.
There you go. Fabulous. Now, it is, as you said earlier, Lawrence, it is part street track, part purpose built.
Yeah.
What challenges does that present the drivers? It reminds me a little bit of Vegas, which is only got a small section on public roads, but that's the same thing. What type of challenge does that present a driver?
It's just that you're going to get two sections where you're going to want one car set up for the faster parts and you're going to want one car set up really for the much slower parts. The bit when they're going through the industrial estate towards the end of the lap on the public streets, it's lots of 90 degree corners, kind of like Baku. And then you're going to want a very different car set up for the first part of that when it is much faster, when you're going through that sweeping section through Le Monumental, the purpose-built section, where actually there's a great massive fan zone. So from a viewing perspective, it's going to be spectacular. So I think it's going to be very challenging for the engineers to kind of get that perfect setup, which is why practice on that Friday is going to be uber important to kind of get the car set up in the right window.
For the benefit of those newer to Formula One, all of the teams have simulators. Drivers can drive simulations of their car to test setups, to test new parts in theory. We sort of get used to those simulators having tracks that we have been racing at for years and years, Silverstone, for example, but this is a brand new track. So when were the teams able to drive the track on the sim? Of course, in this case, you're not just thinking car, you're thinking, I'm getting used to this new circuit, which, you know, it's not like it's a circuit that Portimao, for example, where we're coming back to next season in Formula One, where some of the rookies might have driven it in other parts of their junior career, but not in Formula One. Nobody's driven this before. It's a new circuit. So when were they able to drive it on the sim?
Well, Carlos was actually in the sim just before he got to the Dutch Grand Prix. That was his first time that he got the opportunity to compare what he'd done in the Ford Mustang with me, and he'd done a few laps after that.
It's not long, really.
No, it's a matter of a few weeks, yeah. Really, to kind of get started. But that's more the nature of this season is so busy that you want to put your focus on upcoming races. So I think they've just left it to a little bit later, 3 or 4 weeks out, just because that's the natural next step to kind of get in there.
Stephanie, thank you for your questions. F1explains@f1.com if you want to send some of your own. I said at the start of the podcast, Madrid making its debut. I actually think I was wrong there. What I should have said is it's modern day debut, because this isn't the first time Madrid has hosted a Formula One Grand Prix. Again, a similar thing to Vegas here, which hosted a Grand Prix a long, long time ago before the modern day Vegas at Caesar's Palace. Over 40 years ago, there was a Madrid-based race
Injurama, which is a purpose-built facility around 30 kilometres north of the city. Lawrence, this will be a very different experience, won't it? You touched upon this a little bit at the start when you spoke about the proximity to the airport, that sort of thing. What can fans expect?
Well, I think the thing that was most noticeable for me for a street track was how wide it was. So I think what we'll see is actually cars being able to go side by side far more easily than they would at maybe a traditional racetrack on a street circuit, where it's just obviously more narrow because they're stuck with the streets that they've got. I think the very fact that Madrid were able to do a part permanent, part street track version meant they had utter control over that section where they have built this new banked corner to make it as wide as possible, to open up the opportunities to put some elevation change in there to allow drivers to have opportunities to overtake. So I think from that perspective, it will be a very different street track to what we've seen in the past. Also, it will be in the city, so it will look cool. The backdrops will look cool. The way that they've gone about painting the place, putting artwork up, it will be a very special, very unique, very Madrid Spanish-esque race. And I think you'll feel that for anyone who gets the joy of going to that race.
I'm very, very excited. Just finally, and this is a cruel question, but I know you'll cope with it. I'm asking you to predict the future, given we've not had any hints of this before. Any teams or drivers you think it will suit? Obviously, Carlos might have a little one-lap advantage, given his lap with you. But other than that, any teams or drivers you think it would suit?
I mean, that is cruel, Christian. But I'll give it my best shot.
It shows you how high esteem I hold you that I think you can predict the future.
Why thanks. I think that actually there won't be anyone who will be worried about the fact that Carlos had a few laps in a road car, that Ferrari did a bit of a filming day either there as well, where they had a bit of learning, because actually these drivers are so good, within 5, 6, 7 laps of practice they'll already have their eye, and given, as you said earlier, Christian, they will spend time on the simulator learning it. But I think it will be more suited to those kind of drivers who like street tracks, who kind of like the uncertainty of what the track conditions are going to be like. They'll like the proximity of the walls and the jeopardy that you get by pushing
Checo
the limit.
Perez loves it. I'm expecting a Perez podium in the Cadillac. That's my prediction.
Well, I think that's
Perez win.
Wow. Okay.
I'm going for it.
You've left me speechless, Christian. That doesn't happen very often.
Of course, Jesse. Cadillac will win races one day, I'm sure, but maybe not quite yet. But Checo does love a street track.
Yeah, and I think it will be drivers like Checo who love street tracks. It'll be drivers like Ollie Bearman, who, you know, who did well, always goes well at Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. It'll be drivers who excel in Monaco and those kind of things, even though they're narrower as well. It'll be the drivers who can adapt very quickly, who live more in the seat of their pants kind of feel when they're trying to learn a circuit, that will get the best out of it. So I'm excited to see how it turns out.
You heard it here first, folks. F1 correspondent Lawrence Barreto predicting a Perez-Bearman podium in Madrid. Well, Lawrence Barreto, this has been a joy. Thank you for coming back on F1 Explained. We always appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me. I look forward to the next time.
Lawrence, we look forward to having you back, as always. Of course, there'll be a full debrief of the Spanish Grand Prix in Madrid for the first time with Tom Clarkson and his esteemed guests on this very feed with F1 Nation. We've also got Beyond the Grid as well for in-depth stories from up and down the world of Formula One. Here on F1 Explains, we've got new episodes every Friday. I've mentioned it a lot. Please keep sending me questions. We're here till the end of the season. F1 Explains at F1.com, and we'll answer your question very soon. For me, Christian Hugill, in the F1 paddock with Lawrence Barreto. Bye for now.
Bye.
Hey guys, it's Ashley Canetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. You know, I'm always looking for simple ways to make better choices, especially when it comes to food. Lately, I've been using Wise Code, the ultra processed food detector. It's become one of my favorite apps. All you have to do is scan a product and it instantly tells you if it's ultra processed. If I want to dig a little deeper, I can also see the nutrition quality and overall health quality before I buy it. It makes grocery shopping so much easier. I've got little kids, they're picky eaters, but it really allows me to find brands that are going to taste good for them, but also make their bodies happy. You can download Wise Code on the App Store and give it a try today.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Most dog food brands don't really want you seeing how their food is made. Just Food for Dogs is the opposite. They actually invite you in. You can walk into any of their kitchens and see real human-grade ingredients like chicken, beef, carrots, and peas being prepared right in front of you. It's real food made in real kitchens. Nothing is hidden behind labels. And that kind of transparency says a lot. Nothing to hide, everything to love. Go to justfoodfordogs.com and get 50% off your first order.